Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Hindalco Industries fourth quarter FY22 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference call is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Subir Sen, Head of Investor Relations of Hindalco. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, and a very good afternoon or morning, everyone. On behalf of Hindalco Industries, I welcome you all to this earnings call for the fourth quarter of financial year 2022. In this call, we will refer to the Q4 FY22 investor presentation available on our company's website. Some of the information on this call may be forward-looking in nature and is covered by the safe harbor language on slide number two of the said presentation. In this presentation, we have covered the key highlights of all the businesses for the fourth quarter of the financial year 2022 and a segment-wise comparative financial analysis of India business and our subsidiary, Novelis. Please note that the unallocable corporate AS&G expenses, which has been used to apportion to individual business segments, is now clubbed under unallocable expense to our income to truly reflect individual business segment EBITDA in the Indian operations. The corresponding segment information for the prior periods have also been restated accordingly for a comparative analysis. We have with us on the call from Hindalco's management, Mr. Satish Pai, Managing Director, Mr. Praveen Maheshwari, Chief Financial Officer. From Novelis' management, we have Mr. Dev Ahuja, Chief Financial Officer. Following this presentation, this call will be open to any questions you may have. An audio replay of this call will also be available on our company's website. Now let me turn this call to Satish.
Thank you, Subir. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining today's conference call on Hindalco's earnings for the fourth quarter of FY22. Let me now start with our progress for the financial year 2022 across the various sustainability metrics on slide five and six. On the environment front, with our continued focus on water, waste, air emissions, and biodiversity, we have achieved 86% of total recycling and reuse of waste, 102% of bauxite residue utilization at three out of our four alumina refineries. Utkal Alumina Refinery is conducting two pilot pits for the reuse of bauxite residue by backfilling of mines and construction of roads, of which pit one is ready and pit two is under construction. We have already applied to the Indian Road Congress for accreditation of bauxite residue as a replacement of natural material for roads upgrade and embankment construction. On the fly ash recycling, I'm very happy to inform you that we have now attained 114% of fly ash recycling this year, which means in this year we have recycled beyond what we generated and sent to cement and other uses. On water in FY22, we have achieved 9% and 25% reduction in specific water, freshwater consumption in terms of meter cube per ton in aluminum and copper respectively, which is well in line with our target of 20% reduction by FY25 from the base year of FY19. We are also adding one site each year to achieve zero liquid discharge by the year 2025. We are working on several fronts like increasing the rainwater harvesting, reducing the consumption of fresh water, and ensuring zero liquid discharge at all our facilities. Till date, we have created 3.14 million cubic meters of rainwater harvesting capacity through our CSR activities. Overall, we have achieved a water recycling of 16.1 million meter cube in FY22. We are on our way of reaching net water positivity by 2050. On green cover and biodiversity, in line with the International Union for Conservation of Nature guidelines, we have implemented the BMP at two of our plants and mines. We are also implementing this at four of the other mine sites and further be implementing green belt at all our sites. And this is now spread over 5,100 acres, of which 3,300 was developed in this fiscal year. Coming to the renewable energy and safety updates on slide 6, I'm happy to announce that we have reached our FY22 targets of 100 megawatts of renewable capacity, of which 50 megawatts solar was installed at Renukoot, Renusagar, Mahan, Mauda and Taloja facilities. Currently, 33 megawatts of renewable projects is under execution and another 45 megawatts is under finalization, which includes floating solar, wind power, renewable hybrid, etc. We are targeting to reach 200 megawatts of solar and wind without storage and another 100 megawatts with storage by the end of 2025. We are also working on large-scale renewable hybrid project with a third party on pumped hydro, which can provide up to 100 to 300 megawatts for Aditya plant with connectivity to the 400 kV national grid, targeted by December 2023. The aluminium-specific GHG emissions was recorded at 81.5% in FY22 from the base year of FY12. On safety, we are committed to zero harm and have been continuously upgrading our safety programs and systems to meet international standards to provide a safe environment. The LTIFR was recorded at 0.28. However, unfortunately, there were two fatalities for contract workmen recorded at our Indian operations in this fiscal. Coming to slide 8 on the key highlights of our performance in Q4 FY22. Novelis recorded quarterly shipments of 987 kt in Q4 FY22, which was up from 983 kt in the corresponding quarter of last year. EBITDA stood at 431 million, down 15% year-on-year, primarily due to cost inflation, semiconductor chip shortage in automotive, and short-term operational challenges. EBITDA per ton was at 437 per ton versus 514 in Q4 FY21. Net income from continuing operations was recorded at $217 million, up 21% year-on-year this quarter versus $180 million in the corresponding period last year. Novelis recently announced its $2.5 billion greenfield fully integrated rolling and recycling plant in the U.S. that will support the strong demand for aluminium beverage packaging and automotive solutions in this region. Moving on to Hindalco's India aluminium business performance in quarter four, our business EBITDA for India aluminium was at a record high of 4,050 crores, up 123% year-on-year. EBITDA margin was at 41% and continues to be one of the best in the industry. Aluminium metal sales were up 2% at 336 kt, while our value-added product quarterly sales was at a record 93 kt this quarter, up 1% year-on-year. During the quarter, Hindalco won the Meenakshi captive coal mine with an annual capacity of around 12 million tons to enhance our coal security. Turning to the quarterly performance of the copper business on slide 9, our cathode production in this quarter was 94 kt, while CC rod production was at 69. Metal sales was at 105 kt, while CC rod sales were at 74 kt, up 2% year-on-year in line with market demand. Copper EBITDA was at 387 crores this year, up 20% year-on-year on the back of higher volumes, better operational efficiencies, and improved byproduct realization. Coming to our quarterly consolidated performance, Hindalco EBITDA stood at 7,597 crore, up 30% year-on-year. Quarterly consolidated PAT for continuing operations was at 3,860 crores, up 98% year-on-year, compared to 1,945 crores in the corresponding period last year. Hindalco continues to maintain its strong treasury balance of around $1.1 billion in Novelis and 16,000 crores in India at the end of March 2022. Net debt to EBITDA continues to remain well below 2 times at the end of March 2022, at 1.36 versus 2.59 times at the end of March 2021. On rewards and recognitions, I'm pleased to share with you that Hindalco retains its position as the world's most sustainable aluminium company in the DJSI 2021 ranking, and the only aluminium company in the prestigious DJSI World Index 2021. Hindalco has also retained its prestigious Gold Class distinction in the S&P Global Sustainability Yearbook of 2022. Please refer to the annexure of this presentation on slide 33 for our other awards and recognitions. Turning to the broader economic environment on slide 11. Global economic growth is expected to moderate to 3.6% year-on-year in calendar year 2022, after a post-pandemic rebound of 6.1% in calendar year 2021. The Russia-Ukraine war, lockdowns in China, and an aggressive tightening in monetary policy by advanced economies pose downside risks to the near-term growth outlook. These concerns, however, are being tempered by the resilience in economic activity outside China, visible in the global PMI numbers and U.S. economic activity data. Rising global inflation continues to remain a concern, as broadening price pressures and firm commodity prices are expected to keep inflation elevated for a longer period. China's zero-COVID policy is further exacerbating global supply chain pressures and inflation concerns. IMF has projected a global inflation of around  7.4% in calendar year 2022. Volatility in the commodity and financial markets, as well as supply chain disruption, are expected to continue in the near term until geopolitical tensions de-escalate. On the domestic front, despite global challenges, economic activity has shown resilience due to solid fundamentals and a favorable policy mix. Recovery in the contact-intensive service sector, increasing vaccination, and gradual improvement in domestic demand is expected to support the ongoing pace of growth. The government's focus on CapEx, improving capacity utilization of the manufacturing sector, strong corporate balance sheet, and comfortable forex reserves can shield the economy through external shocks. Merchandise exports have recorded double-digit growth for 14 consecutive months, and growth in imports has also signaled firm domestic demand. On the other hand, any worsening of the external environment, persistent supply bottlenecks and spillovers from monetary policy normalization in advanced economies shall pose a downside risk to these growth projections. The RBI has projected FY23 GDP growth of around 7.2% year-on-year. Global inflation dynamics are the driving path of inflation in India, with both headline and core inflationary pressures rising in the last 4 months. Persistent global supply chain disruptions may keep prices higher for longer, with some easing expected in the second half of FY23. The RBI has projected an inflation rate of 5.7 in FY23. Let me now take you through the aluminium industry overview on slides 12 and 13. In calendar year 21, the global production of aluminium grew 4% to around 67.4 million tons, while global consumption rebounded sharply by 10% to around 69 million tons due to the base effect. Hence, the global markets were in a deficit of 1.6 million tons in calendar year 21. On a region-wide split, the Chinese production increased by 5% year-on-year to 38.5 million tons. The Chinese consumption was primarily driven by sharp increase in demand for electric vehicles. This offset the subdued Chinese construction market and lower ICE vehicle production on account of the semiconductor chip shortage. Therefore, the overall Chinese consumption grew by 6% to 40 million tons in calendar year 21, resulting in a market deficit of 1.6 million tons. The rest of the world production grew by 3% year-on-year to around 29 million tons, whereas consumption grew by 14% year-on-year to around 29 million tons due to the low base effect, resulting in a balanced market in calendar year 21. In Q1 calendar year 22, the overall world production was flattish, while consumption grew marginally, leading to a small deficit of 0.1 million tons. Talking about a region-wide split of Q1 calendar year 22, the Chinese production fell by 1% year-on-year to 9.6 million tons, whereas consumption grew by 2% year-on-year to 9.3 million tons, leading to a surplus of 0.3 million tons in China. In the rest of the world, there was some disruption in production due to rising gas prices. Despite production cuts, the overall production grew by 2% year-on-year to 7.2 million tons. Consumption grew by 3%, reaching 7.6 million tons. This resulted in a deficit of 0.4 million tons in the rest of the world metal balance. As the global markets remain in deficit, inventory levels continue to decline. Consequently, the global aluminium prices continue to grow at $3,280 per ton in Q1 calendar year 22 from an average of 2,762 tons in Q4 of calendar year 21. The rally in aluminium prices in Q1 calendar year 22 was driven by Russia-Ukraine geopolitical situation and depleting global inventories. Global aluminium prices average for the current quarter is at 3,100 tons, factoring in the impact of COVID-related restrictions in China. Coming to slide 13, the domestic demand for aluminium in Q4 FY22 is likely to reach 1,038 KT, reflecting a degrowth of 3% year-on-year and a 1% growth sequentially. The demand for aluminium packaging demand continues to rise in line with the rising demand for aluminium, mainly from the pharmaceutical sector. Sentiments in the real estate sector were optimistic, owing to the robust residential and commercial deals, and government infrastructure projects like AIIMS, IITs, airports, railway stations, metro stations, etc. Growing e-commerce penetration is also benefiting the consumer durable sector. The automotive sector continues to face headwinds due to the semiconductor chip shortage. With the record vaccination of 192 crore doses and supportive government policies, the economic sentiments are likely to improve, driving a broad-based recovery in demand across all the sectors. Moving to slide 14, the global FRP demand is expected to grow about 6% in calendar year 22 versus 10% in calendar year 21. The market demand for beverage can sheet is expected to grow by around 5%, driven by consumer preference for sustainable packaging options and a package mix shift towards infinitely recyclable aluminium. The automotive segment is estimated to grow at 10% in calendar year 22. The mid to long term outlook remains robust, supported by growing consumer demand for vehicles that use a higher share of aluminium, like SUVs, trucks, and electric vehicles. However, in the near term, continued semiconductor shortages are impacting the automotive industry, combined with supply chain challenges on account of China's zero COVID lockdown and the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. These headwinds may impact the automotive builds in the current year. The demand in specialty segment is expected to grow by around 4% in calendar year 22, with strong customer demand across markets, including building and construction, consumer electronics, container foil packaging, and EV battery enclosures. The aerospace segment is expected to grow by 30% in calendar year 22, as order bookings are now improving with the resumption of air travel and is expected to be back to pre-pandemic levels by fiscal year end. The domestic FRP demand is expected to grow by 7% year-on-year this quarter, while it's expected to grow 9% sequentially. Demand remains strong in the packaging and consumer durable sector. The building and construction demand improved due to government projects. However, automotive sector continues to face some headwinds. Demand is likely to grow in Q1 FY23 due to stable demand in packaging, consumer durables, and B&C demand. Turning to the global copper industry on slide 15. In calendar year 21, the global production increased by around 4% year-on-year, while consumption increased by 6%. In calendar year 21, production in China increased by 9% year-on-year and consumption by 5%. In the rest of the world, excluding China, production remained at similar levels on a year-on-year basis, while consumption grew by 7% year-on-year. In Q1 calendar year 2021, global copper production increased by around 3.2% and consumption grew by 0.9% on a year-on-year basis. During this period, Chinese production grew by 3.8% year-on-year, while consumption increased by 0.3% on a year-on-year basis. In the rest of the world, excluding China, production grew by 2.9%, whereas consumption increased by around 1.4% on a year-on-year basis. The spot TCRC was higher at $0.171 per pound during Q4 FY 2022 as compared to $0.157 per pound in Q3 FY 2022. This increase was on account of multiple disruptions in smelters, mainly driven by the temporary closure of the Chinese smelter Jiangsu of around 400 KT capacity. It is likely that this smelter shall restart in June 2022 and is likely to coincide with multiple Chinese smelters restarting their facilities post their plant maintenance. The higher demand from all these smelters could have a negative impact on the spot TCRC during the latter part of FY 2023. However, with new mines being commissioned during the second half of FY 2023, the spot TCRCs are expected to improve during this period. Coming to slide 16. On the domestic side, in Q4 FY 2022, the overall market demand increased by around 6.8% year-on-year to 172 KT in Q4 of FY 2021. Imports declined by around 21% year-on-year at 33 KT in Q4 FY 2022. On a quarter-on-quarter basis, the market demand increased by 6%, while imports declined by 13% sequentially. The trend of operational and financial performance for each of our business segments this quarter and that of the corresponding period of last year are covered in further slides and annexures to this presentation. Let me now conclude today's presentation with our key focus areas on slide 13. Our focus on cost optimization, integration, and ESG has helped the company deliver consistent overall performance quarter-on-quarter in fiscal FY 2022, despite rising input costs and inflationary challenges. Our focus on stakeholder value enhancement is at the core, with our emphasis on value-enhancing growth through organic expansion across our business in India and Novelis. Our recent acquisitions in copper and aluminum in the value-added sectors during FY 2022 in India, as well as our growth CapEx plans, are helping us reach our long-term goals. Hindalco's product portfolio enrichment continues to help increasing the share of high-end value-added products in the overall product mix to strengthen its position as the world's largest aluminum downstream company. Hindalco also continues to move strongly towards its ESG 2050 commitment and is striving towards its integral way to become the industry leader in sustainability. Lastly, and most importantly, Hindalco, based on its strong balance sheet, is ready to fuel the next phase of organic growth across its business. All our growth CapEx planned for the next five years shall be funded in line with our overall CapEx allocation framework, while keeping the overall leverage at a consolidated basis well below 2.5. Thank you very much for your attention, and the forum is now open for any questions you may have.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone wishing to ask a question may please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Sumangal Nevatia from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening. Good evening, everyone, and thanks for the opportunity. Great congratulations on a very strong quarter yet another time. First question is to Mr. Pai. This is a very topical one given we've seen last week, government has imposed export duty on steel. Is there any talk, any fear or any risk of any similar action by government on aluminium as well?
So, Sumangal, our situation in aluminium is a little bit different because we export because the domestic market is oversupplied, largely due to scrap coming in. As you know, 40% of India's aluminium is met through scrap imports. So I think if the government wants to do anything, they should increase the duty on scrap. Because when we export aluminium, as you very well know, the realizations are lower than in the domestic market. So, which is why I think that, you know, it doesn't make any sense to put export duty on aluminium imports, exports.
Yes, sir. So, just that we've got a lot of questions from investors on this, and given that they've put also on stainless steel, looks like government is looking more from a top-down rather than a bottom-up industry-specific.
Yeah.
Got it. The second question is on the cost inflation. If you can just share how are we seeing cost on the carbon front, on the coal front in the coming quarters versus 4Q. And what will be our coal position in terms of inventory, in terms of sourcing mix?
I was expecting the first opening ball at the high speed. So, yeah. Our situation on the cost inflation and coal. So, I think we had guided Q4 cost inflation and we have come in at 9.5%. So, Q4 to Q3, the cost increase was 9.5%. The current situation, I think, is that it's the rest of the costs have sort of, they remain high, but the majority of our problems today are related to coal. So let's talk a little bit about the coal. So what has happened is that with the power demand going up, the government has diverted majority of the coal to power plants. And hence the non-regulated sector, which is where aluminium and all come in, the domestic coal situation has become extremely tight and the e-auction premiums have shot up. So which is why our situation is quite tight right now. We are not... Normally, we would have been at about 20 days inventory. Currently, we are at 10 days inventory. I have to say that it has been steady. So, it's quite tight, but, you know, we are able to lift by road and we are, you know, this is where I think a lot of the management time is going on coal right now. Now, as far as guidance on the cost for Q1, it is, you know, before we had quite a tight handle. So, it's a little bit difficult. But my expectations is it's going to be in the mid-teens. So you're going to have another mid-teens increase over Q4 is what I can say at this stage.
Okay. And just a follow-up, what will be our mix? I mean, are we resorting to a lot of imports now given domestic supply is limited? And this mid-teens kind of cost inflation, are you also considering carbon cost, etc.? And that also is increasing with a lag?
I'm all costs included, Samandar. 15% is not just coal. Everything put together.
Okay. And the mix of...
Yeah, the mix, you know, we have for the first time put in a few parcels on the import in Q1. We did not in Q4, but in Q1 we have. Both for Dahej, a part of Utkal. So we have unfortunately started to import a little bit of coal. We are, of course, trying to ramp up our own mines as much as possible. The linkage percentages, which used to be running at around 60% of our total coal, are today running sort of 52 to 55%, because even linkage, they have capped it of what they give to the non-regulated sector.
Got it. Thank you so much and all the best, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pinakin from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, sir. Sir, I have two questions on Novelis. My first question is that there has been some media talk about the current U.S. administration removing all the extra tariffs that were put between 2016 and 20, including Section 232. If that were to happen, how would it impact the North American markets for Novelis Midwest premium should come off. Would it impact the margins substantially at Novelis in North America?
Dev, can you take it? I think you covered it in your call, but maybe you can repeat it.
Yes. Yes. So so we are also reading the same thing that you are reading in the recent days about the president talking about, you know, reviewing the duties that were imposed, mainly the anti-dumping duties that were imposed on China. Now,
sorry to interrupt, sir. We're not able to hear you clearly.
Oh, really? It was coming across clearly to us. Pinakin, can you hear Dev?
Yes, sir. I can hear him very clearly.
Okay. Dev, go ahead.
Perfect. All right. So here's the situation, Pinakin, that we don't expect anything happening on this too quickly, number one. Number two, that we are contracted for the whole of this year for sure, both on price and volume. Third, that if you simply look at the supply chain situation, you know, just the cost of importing materials from China. I mean, you can be paying as much as $500 a ton today to be importing material. So it's not like, you know, sort of the economics are anyway very favorable. And you know very well that the direction in which China is going, it's no longer going to be like the past where, you know, it's going to be an export-based, subsidized export-based strategy. So for a number of these reasons, we don't expect this to be a major impact. And in any case, you know, if at all, hypothetically, if something like this happens, there will be enough safeguards because nobody here, no administration here wants to impact local manufacturing, you know, based upon a lot of goods from China. So I honestly think that regardless of any scenario, we see a limited impact of this happening on us. I hope that you it answers your question.
Sure. Just following up, you know, from the call in Novelis, we have got some investor confusion regarding the $2.5 billion facility and the expected returns. Now, when we look at post-tax returns of mid-teens, it works out to around $1,000 per ton from that facility of 600 KT. So is that a fair assumption that when that facility gets commissioned, the EBITDA per ton will be $1,000, or are we misunderstanding the return profile from the project?
Well, so I would not comment on specific EBITDA per ton numbers from the project. What I can tell you is that, and what we have been saying consistently, is that the pricing on these contracts is going to be significantly better. We are going to be seeing an exponential increase in the margin as compared to what it is today, and it is not just on the output that is generated from the 2.5 billion green steel. We are going to get the higher pricing on all the volumes, which is not what we have counted. What we have counted in the mid-teens IRR is only the pricing and the volume from the new plant. But the other benefit that we are getting is that we will get a higher pricing on all the can volumes. So all that I can tell you is that we have complete confidence in the economics of the project, and nobody should doubt, you know, that this project is going to be extremely attractive.
Understood. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Indrajit from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for the opportunity. I have just one question, actually. On the new smelter in India, any progress on the power supply arrangements, any kind of timeline that you can, you know, indicate right now?
No, I think that, you know, quite honestly, if you heard on the prepared remarks, we talked about the pumped hydro, which is the only stable power source that we can trust with the smelter. So we actually, by December of this year, try to get that power and see how it works before committing to anything. What we will do, if you remember the investor call, is that some additional pots that we can add in both Aditya and Mahan, we are going to go ahead, which will probably give us about 50 KT more metal. But any large smelter expansion will wait till we get the power sorted out.
Sure. And one housekeeping question. Approximately how much alumina sales we have done, external sales from Utkal this quarter, and what would be our outlook for FY 2023 in terms of alumina sales volumes?
Yeah. For Q4 FY 2022, we sold 216 KT. The whole of FY 2022 was 359. I think we'll be in that 400 KT type of sales for FY 2023.
Sure. Thank you so much. That's all from my side.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amit Dixit from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity and congratulations for a good set of numbers. I have two questions again. The first one is essentially on the working capital buildup, which is like approximately 8,000 crore this year. Now since we have seen the aluminum prices at least, you know, going down compared to Q1. So how much normalization, how much working capital unlocking we can expect in FY 2023?
FY 2023, we don't expect further buildup to a large extent. You see, I don't know if you're referring to the consolidated numbers or the standalone numbers.
No, consolidated.
Consolidated, we had in Novelis, because LME has shot up in this period. The copper also in Indian business, if you're comparing year-on-year, did shoot up significantly. That is the reason why you're seeing the working capital blockage between these two businesses largely. In aluminum business, you know, we are more impacted by the cost of the input, which to some extent impacted us, but it is not such a large amount in the last year. Going forward in FY 2023, if the LME remains where it is for both copper and aluminum on a consolidated basis, you will not see much impact there. To some extent, small impact will may be there in aluminum because of the higher cost of inputs depending upon where they are.
Well, if the working capital release will happen.
In Novelis, if the LME, you know, if it depends on where the LME is, and if it is at today's level, for example, it has come down slightly compared to March levels, then there will be a
Okay. The second question is essentially on CapEx. If you can give guidance, consolidated CapEx as well as standalone CapEx for FY 2023 and FY 2024.
Dev, do you just want to give the Novelis CapEx first, then I'll just give the Hindalco India one?
Yes. Just to repeat the guidance that we have given at our recent call, $1.3-$1.6 billion would be our total CapEx for fiscal year 2023. That's the number we have guided to.
Yeah. In India, we are going to be spending this year about 3,000 crore of CapEx. In the investor or the capital market day call we did in March, the projects that we had announced on basis of that, these are the numbers for FY 2023.
Okay. Great, sir. Thanks and all the best.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Ritesh Shah from Investec. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. Couple of questions. Sir, first is on hedges. How has it moved? How do you look at for the next year?
Nothing much. I mean, you know, the hedge position has not really moved much. For FY 2023, the total position is 30% at an average of 2,500, and 14% of the rupee at 81.4. No real movement on the hedge position.
It has only marginally increased, right? 30% you said at $2,500, right, sir?
Yeah. I think the last set we did when we got about 3,300 or 3,400, we got the last bit which sort of made it to around 30% with the average going to 2,500 now.
Sure, sir. That's useful. Sir, given you have indicated hedges, how should one understand the realizations into next quarter? What I'm trying to understand is LME plus premiums. How has the premiums trended basically? So basically, if you can give some color in next 3 months, 6 months, that would be great.
I didn't get the question. Have you understood it?
No, no. So see, hedging, as far as hedging is concerned, it is only for the LME. Premiums are not hedged. And premiums, if they move up or down, go directly into our bottom line.
So the question is, how has the premiums moved? We understand LME has corrected. I just wanted to
I think the Midwest has remained, Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, more or less at the same level. And so has the NJP. So there's not been much movement on the premium.
No, not much movement. It is still well into the 800. So the premiums are continuing to be strong, and we don't expect that to change anytime in the near future, just given all the global situations around supply chains, lack of supply, and, you know, difficulty in material movement and all of that. So yeah.
Sure, perfect. And sir, last question. Sir, if at all government had to tame inflation, is there scope for government potentially reducing import duty on aluminium as well as scrap? And if that is the case, how should one look at the impact on the company?
So look, I don't think you realize, but the aluminium that is sold in India is not sold at import parity, because the domestic market is oversupplied, and hence there is a discount to what we sell. So frankly speaking, by playing with the duty of the aluminium, there's nothing to do with the inflation. Majority of the aluminium cost is based on LME plus premium. Unlike the steel market, which does not have a worldwide benchmark for pricing, aluminium has.
Sure. This is helpful. Thank you so much for the answers.
Yeah.
Thank you. We'll move on to the next question. That is on the line of Prashant Kumar Kota from Dolat Capital. Please go ahead.
Sir, good evening and thanks for the opportunity. Sir, my questions are two, sir. First one, sir, broadly if you look at the business as a whole, one is aluminium. 2, alumina, 3, aluminium downstream, 4, copper, 5, Novelis. On one end of the carbon footprint spectrum is aluminium, although over there also we are doing a lot of green, etc., incrementally green, etc. And on the other end is Novelis, wherein we are the poster child of reducing carbon footprint for the world in terms of beverage cans, you know, lightweighting, etc. So different ends of the spectrum. And alumina is different, and over there we have a very good strategy on red mud disposal, etc. On the downstream side, in the past, once you had also alluded that, you know, generally downstream businesses get a good valuation multiple success, and copper is a countercyclic. So these are five different businesses, sir. So the just on the carbon footprint and even otherwise on the business dynamic side, somewhere is the value proposition lost. Is there any merits in trying to, if we do something like a demerger and list separately? I just want to know your thoughts, sir, strategically, broad thoughts.
Okay. So I think it's very difficult on a call to give you broad strategic calls, but so I'll give you a broad answer to say that we are constantly evaluating all options to increase shareholder value.
Understood, sir. Understood, sir. Thank you. Sir, and what about, sir, once the Meenakshi block is up and running, by when do we expect that to start producing, and by then what will be our mix, sir?
Look, once I told you Chakla will start by December of next year, Meenakshi will take at least another year more. So let's say it's about 36 months from today. When both those mines are running, and we also have a mine called Banda that SL should bring on by next year, then, as I said, the amount that we will require from non-captive sources will be about 5%. Because the Dahej you will still have to bring, because it's on the jetty, it's far away from these mines. So Utkal you will have to take a little bit. So we'll be about 5% from the outside. We'll be completely self-sufficient.
Oh, that's great, sir. Understood. So that's it from my side. Thank you, and wish you all the best.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pallav Agarwal from Antique Stock Broking. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, sir. So if you could just explain a little bit on this cash flow hedges, you know, I think this consolidated, we have a loss of about 4,867 crores, and you know, at the standalone level. So, you know, does this pertain to a normal hedging activity, and, you know, how will this flow through in the P&L and balance sheet in FY 2023?
So, you're referring maybe to the OCI number.
Yes. Yeah, you're right.
OCI is a mechanism which is more notional, and it is basically based on the current level of hedges and current forecast of the prices. They calculate what could be the potential loss, and that loss could turn into profit depending on how it actually turns out. So OCI is purely a notional number, and tomorrow, if the, let's say, if the LME turns around and, you know, this could turn into profits as well. So we should, it's only for reference, and I don't think we can say for sure that this will be the loss or profit going forward.
Sure. So to understand this, so if the LME comes down, then some of these losses can reverse.
Yes.
Would that be a correct understanding?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, but you may have a corresponding negative impact on the P&L, because.
Yes. So, no. So if LME turns around, then on hedges, you will not lose as much or you might gain. But the unhedged portion, then we suffer a loss because, I mean, that is not hedged and the LME goes down. So, hedging is a defensive strategy for us. It ensures a certain level of realization, and when you look at losses or profits, you are looking at the market opportunity in comparison to that.
So let me, the other simple way is that, you know, as I said, we have 30% hedged at 2,500. This 30% is hedged over April to March of this year. So every month as it gets unwound, the difference between the current LME and the 2,500 is that negative that you're seeing, which will get coming into the P&L.
Sure, thanks. And I mean, we are like, as a matter of policy, we are, you know, do we go above 30% or, you know, is that something that we stay at? Is that a number that's fixed?
No, so the 25%-30% is our defensive position that we take for the following year. So, like, for example, by October of this year to December, we would want to take the defensive hedge position for FY 2024. Now, during the current year, if we see the opportunity of getting any spikes or anything, we can increase beyond 30. But generally, the defensive position that we have communicated and we stick by is the 25%-30%. As I just told you, it went from 25 to 30 because we got the last 5% in Q4 at a very high LME, that which is what we grabbed.
Oh, sure, sir. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Vikas Singh from PhillipCapital. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir.
Yeah, good evening.
Sir, in the past, you have given us a metrics like every $100, LME coming down, release roughly about $60 million of working capital in Novelis. Do we have similar metrics that every $100 Midwest premium coming down, how does it impact our EBITDA?
Dev?
So these are not numbers. These are not numbers that we give out publicly. But what I can tell you is that the way premiums impact us is that we have hedges on LME, but the premiums are really primarily exposed. We don't have any hedging mechanism on the premium. So what you see in our results is a big metal price lag impact last year. Yes. If metal prices come down, we will see the other way. We will see metal price lag becoming a negative factor. So really, it is not an EBITDA sensitive thing largely. The largest part of that is really the metal price lag impact because of the unhedged premiums that we have. Now, on the other side, to be completely, you know, sort of open, that when prices come down or when premiums come down, it also impacts a little bit on the spread side, and that's the overall reduction in the price of metals. So basically, spreads do get impacted. Now, these are not numbers that we disclose publicly. What I can tell you is that we will watch for the metal price lag. For the time being, we don't see any big impact. And the premiums are going to be steady and strong. At some point, there will be some correction, and we have to be ready for that.
Understood, sir. Sir, in terms of our total growth capex, which we have planned roughly about over 8 billion, how much of this is committed, basically? What I want to know that even if the global growth softens, how much of this capex, what percentage we will still go ahead in terms of commitment?
So, look, let me first give you a little broad answer on that. This, we have run a five-year scenario using very, what I would call, conservative assumptions to satisfy ourselves that this capex can be done with internal accruals. So that is point number one. Point number two on what is committed in the Novelis side, the 2.5 billion just got committed as we announced it. And on the India side, we have got about 3,000 crores is actually committed. But our assumptions for the 5 year have been done with what I call historically conservative numbers, because we have done what you may call a stress test just to convince ourselves about the question you asked. So even if we go through a little bit of a downturn, especially on the commodity prices, that can happen, we wanted to ensure that we can do our capex plans with our internal accruals. Of course, many of the projects that are not being approved can always be shifted out a little bit.
Understood, sir. And sir, just one last question. Please go ahead.
On the economic downturn question, because if your concern is what happens in case of an economic downturn, I think that the clarity that we need to give you is that we are today out of capacity when it comes to beverage cans. Now, our customers expect the market to be growing much, much, much more than what we are expecting. I mean, our baseline growth is more like, 3 to 4% on the conservative side. Customers are expecting it to be much stronger. And can is a counter-cyclical business, So even if you take worst-case scenarios, if the growth is like 2%, hypothetically, I mean, nobody is looking at that scenario, but even if it is that, we don't have any capacity. So you can see that a good part of the investment we are making is catering to the growing can market, where anyway we don't have capacity. So downturn or no downturn, we will need more capacity regardless. So you just need to kind of keep that at the back of your mind.
Understood, sir. And just one last question. Is we already reached our bottom debt, or since we have the capex plan going ahead, or there is a potential for the debt to come down further?
No, I think that again we covered that in March. For us, in Novelis, there is a small 300 odd million of term loan left that will get paid back. And in India, we had said that, the 6,000 crore bond that is coming due, we will pay back, and about 2,500 of long-term loans. So the last remaining debt reduction will be largely in India of 8,500 crores this year. But on the Novelis side, we are more or less done. Our net debt to EBITDA commitments remain firm there, and we are going to put the cash generated into organic growth capex.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for answering my question.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Kamlesh Bagmar from Prabhudas Lilladhar. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, sir. One question on the part of novel is, like, you are highlighting that there would be a big supply-demand gap. But if we see in 2023, a lot of supplies are going to come up there. And apart from that, like, I wanted to know, like, how much of our contracts are going to get reset or repriced? And, this EBITDA run rate, which we are guiding, like, say, $500 plus levels, so how that would pan out over the coming years? No doubt you have guided, mid-teen IRRs on the new project. But if the situations improve from these levels or back to pre-COVID levels, are we in the position to generate an EBITDA pattern of $600? Because Over the last couple of years, things have been volatile. But as things improve, what run rate we are looking at? Because that is the guidance really required from you, sir.
So I think I'll let Dev answer, but look, I don't think we can give you a EBITDA per ton guidance over the next 5 years, but I'll let Dev answer your overall question on supply demand.
Yeah, so a couple of things. One, that for all the new expansion, particularly the 2.5 that we have just announced, we have it all backed up by contracts, and these are volume and price contracts. The market is very, very constrained. I mean, we are in a situation where anything that we produce today, like the customers want it. So the market is already constrained and will continue to be constrained for the next many years, actually. There is not enough capacity even despite this expansion, right? So really speaking, we don't expect any kind of an uncertainty around the ability to sell this capacity. You made a mention that you expect a lot of supplies to come in 23. I don't know where that information is coming from. Well, there are not going to be many new sources of supply in FY23, but really to keep it short, the market is constrained, will continue to be constrained. To your point about future EBITDA, I mean, we'll not talk about long-term guidance. All that I can tell you is that there is a lot of earnings potential coming ahead of us. And for the time being, let's just stay at above 500, but there's a lot of earnings potential that would come as some of our expansions get commissioned.
But sir, when we are so confident about mid-teen IRRs on new CapEx, which is going to come up, like say, roughly around, it would be fully operational 5 years from now. So can't we have the visibility, like say, one year down the line?
So look, I think from a guidance point of view, we are constantly maintained that we will have a $500 plus, which is what Novelis has said. And the reason why we stick with this and not give exact numbers is because the market environment can be quite volatile. You have geopolitical issues going on, you have supply chain issues going on, you have semiconductor chip shortages coming on. So to give a guidance like that, then I'm going to ask, can I conclude that, there's no more semiconductor chip shortage, etc., which is why we give you a guidance saying that we are quite confident in the mid to short term, and we are quite confident that we'll make that 500 plus. I think we cannot go beyond that to give an exact number.
And sir, lastly, in India, in aluminium, value-added heads are roughly around 28% mix. So how do we see this mix going forward over next 2-3 years?
Sorry, what 28% mix?
Yeah, that value-added products in aluminium India.
So aluminium India, out of 336 KT we sold, 93 was value-added. Okay, so it's now running at roughly 100 KT a quarter, and our production on the prime is about 330 KT a quarter. So we are at about 33% types. And the expansions that we have announced, so Silvassa extrusion, which is another 30 KT, will come online by sometime early next year. And the FRP expansion actually will take 2 more years, which will add another 170 KT. So these are already publicly announced projects.
And so when do we plan to give breakup between downstream and upstream EBITDA and those figures?
Very soon.
Thank you, sir. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ashish Kejriwal from Centrum Broking. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, my question is on world cost curve. We have seen that world cost curve has increased significantly, and we are still having the first quartile of the world cost. So even after this 15% increase, where our situation will lie? Is it possible to quantify number?
Sorry, you're breaking up. I got up to cost curve. You want me to quantify what?
What's the first quartile of the world cost curve right now? And
I don't have the, I mean, if you take the CRU, you will probably get that number, what the first quartile is. We know we are in that, but I think we'll give you the CRU cost curve.
Okay. So, okay, I'll take it from today. Second is on the coal cost.
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Kejriwal. Sir, your audio is not clear.
Yeah.
Can you use a handset mode while speaking? Or if you could get into an area of connectivity.
Yeah. Is it better now?
Much better.
Yes.
Thank you.
Much better.
Okay. Okay. I was looking at coal cost because now you mentioned that our 15% increase in cost of production in FY23 first quarter mainly is because of the coal cost. So,
yes, I think we lost him.
Sir, he's still connected. Mr. Kejriwal, we are not able to hear you. As there's no response from the current participant, we'll move on to the next. Also, a reminder to the participants to restrict their questions to two per participant only. We'll move on to the next question. That is on the line of Tarang Agarwal from Old Bridge Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Good evening. Two questions. One on Novelis. To an earlier participant's response, they suggested that procurement volumes are contracted for the year and so are the prices. Did I hear it correctly?
This, yes.
Yes. So if it was in the context of the duty question, I was talking about the yearly volumes, which would be the impacted part. The anti-dumping duties are essentially, relevant for the specialty business, So, yes, what I said is that for the specialty business, we have annual contracts, and so the volumes and the prices are contracted. So it was in that context. I mean, for other businesses, of course, there are longer-term contracts, to be clear.
Got it. The second question is the TCRC charges for the year that went by and for the upcoming year.
The TCRC in the year that went by was 15.5, let me give you the number, 15.3, and the current year TCRC benchmark is 16.7, which is an increase of 9% over last year.
Okay.
These are calendar year numbers, by the way.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bhavin Cheda from Enam Holdings. Please go ahead.
Yes, India 3,000 crore capex is including a maintenance capex or this is a growth capex number?
Including maintenance.
Including maintenance. Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vishal Chandak from Motilal Oswal Financial Services Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much, sir. So my question was with regards to your continuity of capex. You have on one end mentioned that most of your capex would happen through your internal accruals. And on the second end, you've also mentioned that your threshold for your net debt to EBITDA would always be around 2.5x.
Yes.
So currently, the net debt to EBITDA stands at about 1.4x. And I'm not sure if your net debt also includes working capital, if you may kindly clarify that as well.
It does.
So is it fair to assume that in case your earnings falter because of the commodity cycle, you would still continue with your capex trajectory and raise debt to the extent of hitting the 2.5 internal ceiling?
You just said raise debt. No, we will only be funding our capex through internal accruals. Yes, I confirm that. And I keep saying that, we have at this stage committed, like in Novelis, the $2.5 billion project, in Hindalco, the FRP, Lapanga, and the remaining capex projects, we have the flexibility to decide when we start it if we do get into, severe trouble with the earnings.
That's pretty clear. So that implies that in case commodity cycle goes down below our threshold levels, there is a possibility of deferring the uncommitted part of the capex.
Yes, we will not allow the net debt to EBITDA to go above our guidance. And at this stage, we have no plans with the capex that we have announced to add any debt to finance that.
And lastly, so this debt number that you have included in the presentation also includes your working capital debt, or it's only part of the long-term debt?
It includes all debt, including working capital.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Samuel Chen from AllianceBernstein. Please go ahead.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hi.
Hello. Hi. Thank you. Okay, just one quick question. This is regarding the potential renewable power that you guys are evaluating. I'm not sure if this is mentioned in the previous call. Is there any possibility to reveal the potential size of that power, maybe just a range? That would be great. And also, just assume for the moment the plan is everything goes well. Relative to your existing smelter operations, right, where is this potential plan in terms of cost curve? Thank you.
No, I think that, you know, the potential of the pumped hydropower, theoretically, the numbers are quite large. But what we want to ascertain is the loading factor at which we can get it. Because the problem with renewable is people will tell you 70, 75, 80% load factor. But, you know, that is over a period of 1 year. And there are times when they can go down to 50. So, which is why this pumped hydro promises a more than 90% steady. So, we want to take the first 100 megawatts at Aditya, the existing plant, to check out the viability. And once that viability works, the price of that power is not going to be much higher than what we have for our thermal coal. It's not a cost-driven issue. It is more from a getting a green power, which is driving our thought process.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Satyadeep Jain from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. Just a follow-up to the questions around the capex on the India smelter one that you outlined on field 180 KT. First of all, the capital intensity seems a little high for a brownfield standalone smelter of almost $4,000 per ton if you look at $685 million for 180 KT. What is driving that kind of capital cost inflation for a brownfield standalone smelter? And tied to that would be the decision to ultimately go ahead with it. This is still under review as per the presentation at the Capital Markets Day. Now, you also have, I believe, finalized the pump hydro contract. The decision to finally give it a go ahead or not will be predicated on the economics or aluminum price. If aluminum prices don't pan out in a certain range, would you look to just not go ahead with the project? Those are the two questions on smelter.
So let me say that first, the current priority is our downstream projects that we have already announced, and that's where the next 2 years capex is going. Point number two is that we will get this power hopefully by December of this year, and we're going to try it out for at least 1 year to see how the stability, cost, everything goes. So I think that, you know, we have at least another 2 years before we do anything with the smelter. So I would not honestly spend too much time worrying about a smelter expansion at this stage.
Okay. And the capital cost for that smelter?
So see, the capital cost, I don't think it's a very high intensity. Those are the current pricing. If you actually look at most equipment and pricing now, it is relatively on the higher side compared to the past. So this is a sort of a budgetary allocation we have taken, but it's not out of the whack, is all I can say.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the last question. I now hand the conference over to the management for the closing comments.
Yeah, thank you. I think that, you know, thanks for the attention. I just wanted to reiterate that fundamentally, you know, whether it's Novelis or Hindalco, we have a very strong operational base and a very strong balance sheet now. So I think that demand looks very good. We may have macroeconomic uncertainties, cost inflation, but I think that we are quite confident that we will be delivering steady and good results going forward. So thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Hindalco Industries Limited, that concludes this conference call. We thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.